Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine, episode 116. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, TV critic, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm super excited. There's more TV.
another week. What can you say? Another week.
I don't want to sound like it's drudgery. It's not drudgery. It's just like I'm hoping to my new thing, Jason, for 2017, I'm going to add it to my finalized version of my resolutions, which are in beta, basically. And I'm firming them up for the end of January. Is I want to finish more shows. I want to talk more about endings than beginnings.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
That's my New Year's resolution.
I like that. I finished a couple shows that I wanted to talk about, in fact.
Ooh,
in a little bit.
Right on topic.
Yeah, I know, right? Mm-hmm. I want to go into the stuff that you reviewed and the stuff that is coming up. The Magicians came back this week. I watched the first episode of that. That's a beginning, not an ending.
Right.
But I kind of enjoyed it, although the cliffhanger. I don't know if you saw the full season last year.
I did not.
It ends with a pretty dramatic cliffhanger that is hand waved. I mean, like literally hand waved in the first minute. Like, oh, that it's fine. Everyone's fine.
Everybody's good.
Everybody was dead, right? Well, no, there's magic, and it was fine.
Yeah.
All right.
We're all
great.
Good. Yeah.
Magic is great. So but it was enjoyable, and there are several laugh out loud moments. And I remember that's actually one of the reasons I like that show, is that their knowledge of Patrick Swayze movies becomes a key plot point at one point, which is in this magical realm, which made me laugh.
So
Magicians, I'm happy to have it back.
You got to love a magic show, because if they can pretty much do anything and then say, well, it's magic. That's how we fixed it.
Yeah, because magic. That's mm-hmm. right. Well, you know, I mean, fair enough. It is the Magicians. They do get to do that. It just, it seemed a little easy. Why were we so worried? We should have not been worried about any of the jeopardy of any of our cast, because, you know, magic.
I did see that somebody who reviewed it and watched a bunch of episodes really liked it. So,
yeah, it sounds like that. I mean, obviously, I don't get screeners, so I only can tell you about the one episode, but it looks, not that I'm bitter, but it looked like The Magicians is continuing, and it's a very weird show, and I enjoy it, but
I want to catch up on it. I know my daughter is trying to get into it and like the beginning of the first season, and she's mm-hmm. into that, and I need to catch up and finish it again. Endings, so there we have it. Endings, yeah. Gotta be on.
And I think it really got better as it went last year, so
yeah.
I wanted to mention, because I didn't mention it last week, I can't believe that I forgot to mention it, is that The Good Place wrapped up its first season, and I want to kind of give that one the old standing O, because I thought it was great the whole way through, and managed to do, you know, tell a story while also having individual funny episodes, and the last hour was spectacularly good, and changed all sorts of perspectives on what you've been seeing in the show. It was really great, so I just wanted to mention that, since we hadn't talked about it in a while, that they just ran the last episode for this season, at least, and I thought it was great.
Yes, everybody who's seen it thinks it's great. Guess who hasn't seen it?
Well, you put on your list for finishing this year,
I'm
right?
Finish
it's a perfect
it this weekend,
finishing
yeah.
show.
Yeah, I'm going to finish that one this weekend, because I'm pretty much caught up until the end there. So I only have a few episodes to get through. And that's one of the... And that actually, to be honest, that actually was one of the things that prompted me to say, hey, you know, as TV critics, we get caught in this thing where we end up with half seasons and beginning seasons, but only rarely and with extra effort, you know, particularly if you have other things going on in your life, do you get to finish these things. And often it's not until somewhere in the middle of the year, and especially this mad dash at the end, as you start doing lists, where I'm spending like weeks and weeks of like barely sleeping and trying to catch up on finished things. And I just really want to get to that earlier by cutting out like having to do reviews of shows that I don't really give a damn about. So that has been my manifesto that I've pitched to THR. Because, like, for example, one of the things I want to do right now is, and I can get to them finished before everybody else because, you know, screener privilege. But I want to go in and finish Taboo and The Young Pope, and I have those episodes. Because I think those are shows that people struggle with. They're interested, but they're challenging shows. And I think at some point in the middle of a challenging show, you do get that question of like, really? Do I finish this thing or do I not? It's like a book, you know, that's what happens to people when they read books a lot.
Right.
So I'm told. And I'm going to do that with these shows. I'm going to finish them and then tell people like, hey, they either got where they were supposed to get or they didn't. Yeah.
I think it's huge. What I would say is you think about this way, because I know this is ridiculous to say that, you know, imagine you had unlimited time because you have very limited time. But would you ever recommend that somebody review a book based on the first four chapters?
Right. I know.
You absolutely wouldn't. But the problem is that the way TV has historically been made and the limited time that TV critics have to watch stuff. I mean, it's better than now that they'll often give you screeners of four or five episodes instead of just the pilot. But still, you know, you could argue that what your audience really wants to know is this show worth my investment? And that's a commitment to like the whole show or the whole season. And you say this all the time, right? Which is, you know, this, you're trying to divine the whole based on a sample is basically what you often talk about this, where you'll be like, well, the pilot wasn't great, but then it seems to pick up, or I don't know. I saw four episodes and I don't think that this is enough to sustain. You're trying to guess what the big picture is going to be based on your experience and based on what you saw. But all things being equal, it would be much better if you could come out with a review of Westworld or Game of Thrones or Casual or really anything and say, I saw the whole thing and it's worth your time. But is that practical?
Yeah. And in many instances, in actually most instances, it's not. The times that it is practical is when you get something like, you know, you get a catastrophe or Fleabag, where it's a 6 half-hour episode. You can plow right through those and do the whole season and wrap it up. You know, and for example, and Fleabag is a perfect example of that. Less so catastrophe, because it always seems like it ends in like mid pause, like someone's taking a breath and the season ends, and they need more episodes. But Fleabag, to actually be able to say this show was really excellent because of this, like the trick of playing the comedy off of tragedy in that I wouldn't have got to the tragedy if I had just watched one or two, three episodes. So yeah, finishing is more important. And, you know, it's even like you go back to something like Sense8, where when it came out and somebody else reviewed it and I was behind on it and I watched one and I'm like, oh my God, that's confusing. And I'm not reviewing it. So we'll see. I went and binged that thing after it had been posted, all its episodes have been posted, and it was kind of out of favor as far as people talking about it. And I went and binged it and I thought, okay, now there's a show where my feelings for it were changing rapidly as I watched it. I ended up really liking that show for what it accomplished. And I would have never come to that realization had I not plowed all the way through those. So yeah, it's helpful. It's just not practical. We just don't have time for it.
Yeah. But I like the idea of trying to find your spots where you can finish things and get a sense of it. Because I think you could have detected from The Good Place from the very beginning of what kind of show it was. I don't think my opinion of it changed as it went along, but it really kind of nailed the ending in a way that, you know, I think there was that question of like, how much can they wring out of this premise and all that, and you'll see it, but I think it's just thoroughly great all the way through. So I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and I always find that it's frustrating that when, like, you know, when we're sitting down as critics prioritizing what we're doing, and again, you know, it depends on what level of other extracurricular activities you have going on in your life. Basically, you're constantly moving forward like shark. You're watching all the other shows and we're plotting stuff online. And then you're watching 2 or 3 hours of each one and you're trying to parcel out your days. And so the ones that you've already reviewed are totally in the rearview mirror. And they're like, yeah, if I have luxury of getting there, would be great. But then boom, something like that hits where everybody says, wow, this episode sticks the landing and changes things entirely. And I often feel frustrated, like, I'm like, I have to look back and say, I can see that show in the distance and I remember it. And of course I liked it. But yeah, I didn't get to see the finale. So
yeah,
I'll make amends on that.
Check it out. Watch to the end. We should talk a little bit about Mary Tyler Moore, who died this week.
Yeah, it was, I mean, she's 80. It's not like it's unexpected. It's tragic and sad, and you know, getting to go back and watch a bunch of clips from that. And I watched that show a lot when I was a kid, so it's like, and then reruns for somebody who didn't watch a lot of TV as a kid. The ones that I did watch kind of stuck with me. But yeah, I think for me, you know, you get the call that's happened. You got to put a, you know, you got to put an appreciation together. And a lot of them, you have to find an angle. And mine was pretty easy. I was just like, you know, like right now, with all that's going on in the world, and especially for women to lose, it's like television is arguably the biggest. And certainly, if she wasn't the first, because I think that Margot Thomas and that girl might get more votes. And there were other things. I mean, you could argue that I Love Lucy was in some ways feminist,
right?
But overtly feminist type show was That Girl, and then a few years later when Mary Tyler Moore show came in, that was and that was a much bigger show and a much bigger impact, and it went longer and it was more popular and it more people saw it, and it just, you built this relationship with Mary Richards, and you know, they did some really daring things, and you know, so you contrast her character being basically the first the feminist where they didn't wave the banner about it, but you could clearly get it. And she inspired so many women, I was telling this to my kids, and they were kind of like stunned, like that, you know, at the time, you know, women were basically, they were moms, you know, or they were a secretary, and you saw for 5 seconds, if they were central to the story, they were wives and moms. And you know, they had to have, if they were secondary characters, they were definitely married. And so it was very groundbreaking what they did, what she wore, even what she wore on the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the notion that she's, you know, she's never going to find what she's looking for in her love life, but she has this amazingly successful journey as a career woman. And I wrote that she found her sea legs, and you know, she found in an ocean full of men, and that was super game changing for a lot of women who watched it and for the show. So she was very inspiring. I thought that placed in context with the what it is like now in our country and dying, that she was just left us at a bad time. And you know, beyond the whole women's rights and women's issues that are a challenge in this country, we all could use a good laugh, and she was great at giving that.
Yeah, absolutely. So talented. Not just as, I mean, first off, Dick Van Dyke Show and Mary Tyler Moore Show. So two long running, huge, you know, arguably decade defining sitcoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then MTM.
Yeah.
Which her studio, which she ran with Grant Tinker,
mm-hmm.
who just passed away. In fact, we talked about him. Mm-hmm. And they had the string of shows, hit shows, important shows that MTM Productions, or I guess Enterprises, produced. That's astounding too, right? Because that, then you throw in a Bob Newhart Show, and Newhart and Lou Grant and WKRP in Cincinnati and The White Shadow.
Sure. Yeah.
And then all the way through Hill Street Blues, Remington Steele, St. Elsewhere. I mean, a lot of shows that were produced by MTM.
Well, also, it's like they were a number of those, of course, starting from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, were huge game changers, or they continued the game change, you know, with Phyllis and Rhoda.
Phyllis
were different
Rhoda,
things, you know, but Rhoda especially. But like the, but when you get to all the way through and you get to WKRP in Cincinnati, which is, that's a great show, but like the game changer there is definitely, well, I mean, White Shadow was basically trying to make a 70s film and turning into a series. But the game changer there is Hill Street Blues. I mean, that changed cop shows and television completely.
Well, that's one of the decade defining shows of the 80s is Hill Street Blues for sure. Yeah.
So,
and you could throw St. Elsewhere in there too. And that did the same thing for medical shows in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Hill Street did for cop shows.
So MTM was, I mean, their track record is astonishing. It's really like, and that's not just good management. It's just good artistic vision of like what show is going to work on what network, and let's do something a little bit different. And those two working together really did that a great job on that.
Right. Our friend Andrew in Ireland wrote in about Mary Tyler Moore, and one of the things he said about MTM was, I think that was a model for HBO, FX, AMC et al. For how series are created and managed, which I thought, you know, it's true that was such an influential producer of TV in that era.
Yeah.
And Andrew signs off, love is all around, especially to your mothers. So thank you.
Always consistent.
Always. Mm-hmm. You wrote an appreciation to Mary Tyler Moore that I'll put in the show notes, of course. Mm-hmm. You wrote a couple of reviews this week. Legion is the one that I wanted to at least talk about. We mentioned this last time. Technically, it's an X-Men related show. It's a character from a spin-off comic from the X-Men. But basically, the subline of your story is obscure Marvel property, right? I mean, it is, you don't really need to know anything about where this came from, more that this was an interesting character and story that was mined for raw material by Noah Hawley.
Yeah, and I think that it does, I can't say enough about the visual part of this. I mean, I think it's a visual masterpiece, and it's a very daring on FX's side because, you know, when people tune in on February 8th when this thing premieres, it's a little over, I'm not sure how long they're stretching it out because we don't see commercials in it, but I think the actual running time is about an hour and 7 minutes, so they might be able to stretch that out a little bit longer. And get that to an hour and a half, like a 90-minute start, I'm guessing. But when people see that one, it is visually audacious because it's jarring. It starts out pretty simple. You're thinking, okay, and then there's visions, there's flashbacks, there's really random. Like I was noting that there's this jarring sensibility that's in the show. The visuals are shot. I mean, the decision from Noah Hawley was to take the vision from inside of his brain, basically, and say, okay, this is what somebody who's schizophrenic and a drug addict, this is what their vision of the world is. This is what happens when things are firing off in their brains and not hitting their intended targets. And let's show you what that looks like. And that is disconcerting as a viewer because you can't find a grip on an actual through line to the story. But he does a great job of still giving you that because he gives you some moments like, okay, this is him not dreaming. He's in a mental institution with Aubrey Plaza. But then there's weird flashbacks and there's flash forwards. There's just some trippy dream scenarios that he's going on in his head, but there's also something really subtle that I noticed too. Like when he's in this, and these are not spoilers, by the way, but when he's in this mental institution, they kind of have them all dressed up, the patients. So instead of just like drab blue prison gowns or whatever, that they're doctor gowns, they're walking around. They're in kind of like futuristic, track suits almost. Hmm. So it feels very futuristic. But it's also like, okay, can I quickly identify these? It's their loose clothing and the people are moving around comfortably. And then when they don't leave the timeline and they go to, this character, David's sister, who's sane, it feels very retro. And at the beginning, you don't kind of put the two and two together. But after a while, you're like, you know what? She's dressed like a kind of like a 50s housewife, and the furniture in her house and the way that the house is set up seems like it's 50s, 60s kitsch. And you're like, what era is this? It's really disorienting. And you're like, okay, did we just switch out of is this a flashback? But this is his sister. So that kind of, you know, get ready to check the box. That kind of mind fuck is what this show is all about. I mean, that literally is like if you could put like a thing over it, it would be, this would definitely be Legion mindfuck. That's like what the show's about. And, I love it. And when you get to the end of the first episode, I don't know if anybody else is going to have this feeling. I hope they remember this little discussion I'm about to have when they watch it. It is so weird. And then you're watching it and you're like, okay, I get what's happening. I'm watching what's happening, but there's something in this scene that is so oddly put together. It feels like a Woody Allen like movie where people are running away and they're getting shot at, and I don't know how to explain it other than like it totally works for what they were doing, and yet I was like, it looks really weird and it looks funny and it's not funny. And I just like, okay, whatever they're doing, it's messing with my brain. And then to the credit of the series, once you get to the second season or second episode and the third episode, then you definitely know what this series is going to be about. And that is basically, and this is not a spoiler, that is basically there is a group looking for him and there is a group trying to help him, and the group trying to help him is led by Jean Smart. And she's great, and things get trippier even still on those next two episodes, but you at least get the sense, okay, this is what this series is going to do. Here's a person who has been in and out of mental institutions his whole life and has a drug problem. And one group is trying to tap him because they know that he doesn't know he's a secret weapon. And there's one group trying to help him because they think he has powers that are pretty amazing, and they want to help him achieve those. So that's basically it. You've got a pretty simple battle of two sides going forward, but nothing else is simple at all, especially in the visuals. There's a couple of visuals where I laughed and I was being spooked out, not like a horror film spooked out, but I'm like, okay, guys, that is really fucked up. I literally said that a couple times. I was like, who created this character and why does it keep coming back to haunt this show? So a lot to look forward to visually on Legion. And Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey, he's in an American accent. His hair's cut. He looks totally different. He's got stubble. He does a great job. And I keep thinking I was like, oh my God, that's Dan Stevens. I can't believe that that's true. You know, Aubrey Plaza is pretty much Aubrey Plaza, just a little more drugged out a little bit, I guess. But yeah, Dan Stevens for the win.
I will check it out. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. There's stuff where Noah Hawley has done, he directed the pilot. He has done some stuff, Jason, that I was like, okay, you guys are really thinking. You're like, it's like, because they'll introduce something and you're like, okay, this did not appear in a dream sequence, but I'm wondering if that part of this is real. You know, for example, he's reading a children's book, which hysterically is the world's worst nighttime bedtime story that's ever been created. It is horrific that a child would read a book like that. And you're like, okay, well, this is real. And then randomly that character sort of just pops up in the show. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. I do not know what's going on, but I'm in. So definitely a lot to look forward to. I hope people take to it. But there is not a very Marvel-esque heavy Avengers, X-Men, or X-Men and / superhero element to it. It's not really there. There are some special effects and things like that, but this is a very adult story about mental illness, basically.
All right. There's another review that you posted, which is weird because it's for a show that doesn't actually come out until May, but we should at least mention that you wrote the review of Amazon's fascinatingly titled, I Love Dick.
Yep. I love Dick. Yeah.
Everybody loves Dick, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like when you, and it starts Kevin Bacon. And so like, would believe me, like when you want to say, Bacon's dick, you know, cause you can't.
Yeah. You can't do that. You got to write around
that sentence. Can't do that one. I gotta switch that around and say, as Dick Bacon does this. Yeah. but yeah, I will say this. I'm not a big fan of reviewing things out of film festivals because they do happen in advance. It's THR policy that is the world premiere and thus must be reviewed out of the festival. So I was tasked with taking the three episodes that people were going to see on a Monday at like 2:00 at Sundance, and I had to review it. And I did not like it, and I thought it was pretentious and off-putting and badly paced. I didn't like anybody in the cast. I think there's a very subtle B storyline that happens in the first three episodes where there's like there are two lesbian characters. They are both really interesting. One of the actresses, she's just mesmerizing as an actress. I mean, not just for like looks or things like that. She's just a great actress. She just steals every scene that she's in. I would like to see more about those two. I don't want to see any more about Dick or the married couple starring Catherine Hahn and Griffin Dunn and their life woes. I'm disinterested in all of that. So, yeah, I would say let's maybe this show can grow to where you would like Dick, but you're not going to love Dick. So, I don't know.
All right. Fair enough. I have a few notes before we get to the letters. I have a few notes about stuff that I've seen and the things that are coming that we should at least mention are coming in the next week. I have now finished watching all of Black Mirror.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. There's an incomparable podcast coming out tomorrow as we record this that where we go through every episode of Black Mirror and talk about all of them. My lesson for Black Mirror is that I like about half of them.
Really?
Yeah, I like about half of them. I think there are about six of them that I really liked out of the 13, and there are about four that I hate. And then there's some that are in the middle there. I think what I will say about it is I think it's one of the best depictions of technology I've ever seen in any medium. I think they do a great job of extrapolating technology and showing how the interfaces work and all of that. I think they do a fantastic job with that. And I think it's maybe the best looking show I've ever seen. And just the way it's shot, and it's hard because they're showing kind of near future things and they have to weave them in, and it's done with such care. And then the casting is fantastic. All of the actors are great. It's the scripts, you know, half the scripts I kind of buy into, and the other half I'm like, yeah, that either I find it off-putting because I find it sort of it's either too clever by half, or at least thinks it's clever but it's not, or it's just so brutal that it's hard to grind through it, like such a bleak worldview. But about half of them, I really enjoyed.
There is definitely a strong bleak worldview throughout the Black Mirror thing.
And if you're somebody who hears about Black Mirror and is kind of turned off by it and doesn't want to watch it, I will recommend, if you're a Netflix subscriber, at the very least, you should watch San Junipero, which is an episode in season 3. It is kind of a masterpiece. And if you like that one, watch Be Right Back, which is a second season episode about sort of it's about grief, essentially. It's very sad, with Hayley Atwell stars in that one. And it's fantastic, although very sad. And there are a bunch of good ones, but also there's ones that I didn't like at all. So that's my Black Mirror review. Hey, batting 500.
Yeah, San Junipero, which only annoys me because it's Unipero, but
I know. Well, or Junipero, or I mean, they pronounce it. There are lots of ways to pronounce it, Junipero, but they don't pronounce it any of those ways. It's pronounced like an English person pronounces that word, which is wrong.
I struggle with that.
And it looks beautiful. Great California coastline that they shot in South Africa, which also made me laugh. But it looks great. Looks fantastic. I had to look up what the Cape Town, South Africa climate was, and it turns out it's basically Southern California. So, all right, fair enough.
Fair enough. You got me. Yeah. They did a great job in that.
Well, it looks so good, though.
One of my best episodes of the year.
Just pure visuals. That whole series is spectacular, and especially the Netflix season. I think they really upped their game there. It looks so good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Coming soon, you said you're working on an Agatha Christie. Is that coming next week?
Yes, that'll actually be probably Monday. It'll probably get posted. I'll have it done by Sunday. It could go up on Sunday, but I would look for it probably on Monday. That's the day it premieres.
Witness for the Prosecution?
Yeah, I guess Witness for the Prosecution. It's basically just a two-hour movie. It was just really two episodes in England, and they basically crunched them together on Acorn for a two-hour movie. But it's a good follow-up to my piece last year about all the really great stuff that you can find on Acorn. And I would just add that the 30th is the day that premieres, and I would just add, if you have Acorn, then you are gonna, on the 30th also, they'll have on the site, there's not, you know, it's just there, they put all the classic or first episodes of Al Fresco, the sketch series that had Hugh Laurie and so many other great Emma Thompson. They have so many great British actors and actresses who have amazing comic timing, and they're on that. And it's really just like the DNA of what they would eventually go on to do. It's so it's silly, and it's rarely has rarely been seen in this country. So look for that, Alfresco.
Right. As a sci-fi nerd, I will declare my excitement that The Expanse is returning on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to that. They have a 2-hour premiere on Wednesday. More space shenanigans with The Expanse.
Yeah. Well, and The Expanse and Legacy are going to be, or I'm sorry, Legacy, but Colony are going to be keeping you busy.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. I need more things to watch, but Expanse for sure. I'm gonna be watching that along with Magicians. I think I'm gonna be watching those every week as they're aired. What else? Spy in the Wild is coming. I think you're reviewing that. Is that right?
Yeah, it's. I love PB. PBS. Granted, I wasn't at a press tour, so I was. Maybe they did a big thing down there, and I don't know. But I haven't seen any promos for it. But it's once I started seeing the promos, I was like, this I am definitely going to watch. It's the nature program. But they did like a five, instead of just doing one-off show about one kind of animal or one instance and location, they did, it's a 5-part miniseries where they think they created as many as 30 animatronic animals that were really pretty similar to the animals in the wild. And all of them are equipped with cameras, like little eye cameras. It's a great idea. It's like, how can we get even closer to the animals that we want to follow? I would have loved like a behind the scenes story, like how we planted them there. Maybe that's actually in the series. I haven't started watching yet, but the cut down trailer for it is pretty amazing. From monkeys all kinds of animals that you're going to, birds, rhinos. There's going to have a lot of things that you can actually have a camera in the eye, and then it's going to give you close up views of those animals in their natural habitat, closer than any camera person would have ever been able to get. And I thought, okay, this is ambitious and it's expensive, and I'm pretty sure that they're delighted with the results they got, which means it'll be really fun and probably a pretty good little precursor to getting Planet Earth 2 coming up. It's going to be a bonanza of beautiful nature documentaries coming up.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Two network shows premiering next week that we should let people know exist. Powerless on NBC on Thursday. That's the DC Comics related sitcom? Question mark?
Yeah, that's to be seen, but yes. It's to be seen. So, it's a woman who's an insurance adjuster who like wants the X, whoever, I guess it's X-Men is who, I don't know. No, it's not X.
Nope.
Who is it? Somebody in the DC universe, which of course, as we talked about last week, I don't know. Once the superheroes do damage, this person comes and as an insurance adjuster. Maybe it's hilarious. I don't know. I got saddled with it. I do know that.
Yeah. This is the idea. It's like people without powers who kind of clean up after.
Yeah.
The aftermath of this and they work for Wayne Enterprises, Wayne Security, which is like, so basically Batman owns them, but of course that's all happening off screen.
Yeah.
So yeah, it could be funny. I don't know. I like the idea of a superhero themed sitcom. I think that's, that could be funny. Who knows? Danny Pudi's in it. Alan Tudyk's in it. There's good people in it.
Yeah, right. There is. You never know what's going to happen.
And you never know. And Training Day. It was a movie with Denzel Washington. Now it's a CBS drama on Thursday.
I think
for that.
Yeah. It's well, they have to, you know, familiar franchises is what sells on.
I know, right?
Networks.
It's got,
now.
Got Bill Paxton in it.
Yeah. I can't fault them for it.
No, not at all. It's a name that people have heard of.
Mm-hmm. And in this crowded times of confusion, of confusion. Both, you will say, oh, I've heard of Training Day. Let's see what that is.
That was a movie. It was nominated for some awards at one point. All right, it's all there. Just turn on your TV right now to CBS and just let it sit there until Thursday night.
Don't.
Training Day will come on.
Don't do that.
I'm just dispensing bad advice. Would you like to hear a few letters from listeners?
Would. Sure.
All right, letters from listeners. Here we go. Catherine, originally from the 415, now in the 203, says, hey guys, last week you talked about that Zelda Fitzgerald show. I can answer your musings about, has anybody ever heard of it? I see constant ads for that show on Facebook. so I actually knew about it. I also see a ton of ads for The Expanse and The Magicians. I guess it's some sort of targeting ads based on my love of drinking and science fiction. Yeah, I think they know. Facebook knows everything about you, Catherine. That's the truth of it. She says, speaking of those targeted show ads, I saw one for Santa Clarita Diet. I see Timothy Oliphant is doing something lighter, post-Justified. Have you heard anything about it?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They made some waves by putting their stuff in high profile post sport slots, in football games and stuff. But it is Drew Barrymore's in it and Timothy Oliphant, and it's basically like a cannibal series. It's about cannibalism.
We'll see how funny that is. That's the Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah, cannibalism. People, yeah.
On Netflix.
Soylent Green is people.
Spoilers. For Soylent Green. Any good? Any word on that?
No idea. It's Dan no is idea. Reviewing it.
All right. That's the answer. Is how good is it? Dan will tell you.
I saw the premise and I thought, oh, thank God I can actually go back and watch the ending of The Good Place instead.
Yeah. There you go. Here's a good one from Tony in the Plus 44. Blighty. Tony says, great to hear you talk about Acorn last week. Loads of classic British shows you mentioned there. It's funny, we get so excited about American shows, we forget sometimes that old British shows could get you guys excited. It's nice to see. I wanted to mention Raised by Wolves, as it was in the news recently. It's quite a quirky sitcom by a comedian called Caitlin Moran. And I mention this because it's set in a town called Wolverhampton in the Midlands of the UK. I know the Premier League. I know where Wolf... Anyway, despite not being filmed there, and a former housemate of mine's girlfriend was friends with someone in the show. Congratulations, Tony. it got two seasons on Channel 4 before it was canceled, and Moran recently tries to raise about £350,000 on Kickstarter to finance a special episode and only raised about half. Even in today's expansive TV world, she was asking too much for a show with a cult following. It's hard to say, but the two seasons we have are quite fun, though I don't think you guys would understand a word of it. Anyway, so if you're in the Plus 4-4, maybe, and can understand Raised by Wolves, check it out. Happy New Year, Tony. Thank you, Tony.
Oh, yeah. That's actually, I wrote in my piece for Akon. I'm looking forward to that one. I'm going to get to that.
Raised by Wolves. Mm-hmm. Just turn on the closed captioning. It'll be fine. Wolverhampton. This is an email that's headed, not a thing, handing in a story. This is from Rick in the 703, which Washington, D.C. area. He said, Tim and Jason, when was the last time you handed in a story on paper? That's the way Kara/Supergirl and the other reporters do it at Make a Publisher Catco. Even worse, they submit their stories in report covers with clear plastic fronts, making them look like high school book reports. Obviously, this allows the editor to throw the story back and growl, do it over. Maybe Tim can hand in his next THR piece on paper and see what reaction he gets. Rick in the 703. P.S. You'd think the show's computer genius would have created a content management system by now. Yeah, you know, the Berlanti shows are, like most TV, the Berlanti shows, not really good at knowing how journalism works. Because The Flash is like that, too. Iris on The Flash is a reporter, and it's just, no.
No. It's like people look at that and like, that is not at all what we do. But
it's
okay.
It's not a thing. Yeah, it's all on computers now. It's all, you email it in or you put it in the system and then somebody looks at it. There's no paper. We're not printing things out. Nobody ever handed in a story with a report cover.
I don't think I've ever turned in my history of journalism a story by hand ever. I don't think I've ever done that.
Yeah, I don't think I have either, honestly. I mean, maybe like on my high school newspaper, I might have had to type it. Even then, I typed it in. I don't think I handed it in on paper. I think I just typed it into the computer system. So, never.
Weird.
Never. We did have, in college, we did have people who would, because it was before everybody kind of was assumed to have a computer, we did have some people who would come in with their stories from their, typewriter. And then and then somebody would have to type them into the computer in order to get them in there.
But I see that.
Mm-hmm. I've never done that, but it's sweet. Supergirl, aw. In her universe, they still turn in things on paper.
It's adorbs.
Also, there's a flying lady in that show. I'm just saying, come on. I mean, that's also not a thing. Laser eyes. She has laser eyes. Troy from the 843 writes in, say about this about the librarian, says, Dean Devlin hooked me as a showrunner with Leverage. I mean, who doesn't like a good heist show? His next endeavor has been running on TNT as three separate TV movies, just completed the third season as a show. No Wiley, Rebecca Romijn, Christian Kane, John Larroquette, to name a few. It has quirks reminiscent of Warehouse 13. I wonder if either of you has seen the show and what you think about it. It was just renewed for a fourth season. Troy from the 843. I remembered that the librarians existed.
I remember that it existed. I remember that I opted out of it because it seemed very much. Is it TNT?
Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't it, or is it TBS? I can't know. Not TBS.
I think it's TNT.
TNT or somebody. It seemed very much of a different era.
Yeah.
Than where they're going now. And it seemed like, you know, it seemed like that whole, all those Nicolas Cage movies kind of thing and the.
Yeah, like the National Treasure and all that.
Yeah,
this is one of those things that it seems to be doing well enough that TNT is just going to let it keep running, even though it doesn't really fit with where they're taking the network.
Yeah, it doesn't fit, but yeah, ratings are ratings, and it's. I think they'll look the other way on that. Yeah. The oddball cousin.
We mentioned this briefly because I think we had this conversation, and then in that conversation, I also mentioned that my wife, who is a librarian, watched the first episode of it and said it's ridiculous, and not in a bad way, but that it's kind of ridiculous, and she never watched any. More of them, but so you know, it sounds like it's fun, light entertainment. It sounds like if you're missing Agent X, sorry, fans of the librarians. I'm not trying to insult the librarians. It's like, but you know, it's those National Treasure movies with Nicolas Cage. Those are actually fun. They're not good, really, but they're fun. It's that right. it's an adventure show. If you want that, I hear the librarians delivers on that. Art from the 425 followed up on our discussion of what really weird shows were last week, some shows that are really weird. Art has two of them. Fortitude.
Oh, yeah.
Which he said started strong and went off the rails. Way off.
So far off the rails.
And the OA on Netflix, really, really weird. I've heard that, too.
I've heard that, and then it ends badly. I heard that.
Yeah, so. I also heard that. And he says, thanks for the callback to Get a Life. I love that show, but everyone I recommended it to seriously questioned my sanity. Yep. It's not for other people.
It was a very weird series.
Yeah. Not for other people. Our friend Design Geek Jess, who came to our meetup,
yes.
Our legendary meetup, wrote in with another... she says, super funny you guys talked about weird shows last week. I've been binging on Man Seeking Woman, and wow, that show is a head-scratcher. The season 2 episode all about his sister and Santa just made me think, WTF.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just wanted to say hi.
That, yes, Design Geek Jess, that's hi. And that's that is a great pick for a weird show. I love it, though. It's completely, I mean, it was off the wall the minute it started. I mean, with the, you know, the dumpster troll on the date was... That was the very first one. And then, like, what the second episode for season one was the 140-something-year-old Hitler. It was really, yeah, it was it was wild. I mean, it's a weird show. but you know what? That's doing well for them. That show's doing well for them. It's very creative.
We have two more letters, and we're going out strong. We're going to finish strong here. You ready?
Woohoo! Yeah.
Okay, David wrote in, did not give any other information about him. I think this was on Facebook, and said, listening to the show today, I had a great idea for the next Dick Wolf spinoff, Chicago Podiatry. Just imagine, Tim, a whole hour dedicated to nothing but men's cold, bare feet and the doctors that love them.
Oh, my God. I'm just scarred hearing that. That is just gross. That is gross.
Bravo, yeah. David. Bravo.
Something else. Okay, thanks, David. Now right. David's my nemesis.
And the last, it's good to have a nemesis or two.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You'll get another one called Dave or something, right? Just almost the same.
Right.
This is from Cynthia and the Five and Dime, closing
nice.
Us out. She says, I think I've figured it out. The longest long con of them all. The Riches is back. It's a reality show. In the White House.
Oh, that is, you know what? That is very creative. Yeah. That is, they weren't supposed to be there. They're just going to pretend that they were supposed to be there.
Yeah,
it
sure.
Is. Uh-huh. I miss the Riches still.
When is it coming back, Tim? When Minnie Driver says so.
Minnie Driver's doing pretty well on Speechless, so I think she's going nowhere.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
The long con, longest of cons.
The longest of cons. Thank you, Cynthia. Oh, that's it. So here's. Let me give you the numbers, unless you want to Columbo me. You got anything more?
No.
On your list? Nope.
Yes, I do. Oh. I do want to Columbo you.
All right.
Speaking of long cons, everybody should be watching Sneaky Pete.
Ah, yes.
So on Amazon, go watch that. It's really great. You're going to love it. Okay.
It's like the end of show plug.
Yeah.
Just go watch Sneaky Pete. Do it now. As soon as this podcast is over, which is, it's about to be. You can email us, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can be a nemesis if you want, whatever. You can tweet at us at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And you can find our show notes for this episode at theincomparable.com/TVTM/116. And that's it. Tim, it's a pleasure as always.
And it is, and we will have so much more TV to talk about in the next installment.
We're never going to run out of material. I guess that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
All right, thanks to everybody out there for listening. Tim, see you next week.